The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Canada. Friday, February 17th, 2022. I'm Hugh Hewitt on the West Coast for a few more weeks. I'm glad I'm not in Great Britain this morning. I'm glad I'm not in Ukraine this morning. Lots of headlines here, but the one out of Great Britain is they are having one heck of a big storm. Eunice. Thousands without power, travel chaos, army on standby, second red warning issued. I don't know what a red warning is in the United Kingdom, but it's probably like a nor'easter meets a hurricane in the United States. It's the kind of storm that took the Spanish Armada and put it in the history of the English-speaking people, and that was over. Speaking of which, Dr. Larry Arnn will be along with Dean Stephen Smith in hour number three. Admiral Stavridis will join us next hour to take us into the weekend of war, which is what I think we are looking at. And hopefully Jim Sciutto of CNN and I will be able to connect at the bottom of this hour from Kyiv, where Jim is. Headline. Reuters, minutes ago, alarm as East Ukraine shelling enters second day. Ukrainian government forces and pro-Russian rebels. Jeez, Reuters. Putin people increased their shelling in eastern Ukraine for a second straight day, an escalation that Washington and other Western allies say could form part of a Russian pretext to invade. They're going to invade! At the Munich Security Conference, which is where Europeans gather to yell at Americans for not arming themselves, there's great concern in the hallways. President Biden is going to call Western allies again. Don't you know that they all put their heads in their hands when they've got to talk to Joe? U.S. says it's willing to risk being wrong over its warnings of an invasion. Look, I am not cynical. I am experienced with this group. This gang. So I went on Special Report last night with Brett Baer. I was on there with Harold Ford. Good guy. By the way, he'll reference that we are both University of Michigan trained lawyers, Democrat, and Kim Strassel is smarter than anybody. And first question, Russia, Ukraine, after all this diplomatic activity, yesterday, quote, diplomatic, Secretary Blinken at the UN, looking not very Colin Powell-esque. And not very Adlai Stevenson-esque. And we've got General Secretary Austin at NATO speaking like the Sphinx. We've got Joe Biden mumbling a few words on his way to the helicopter. All told, what I think, cut number 24.
Hugh, we have not seen in the UN Security Council the level of tension about pushing Russia to back off of the Ukraine border, really since, I would argue, the Cuba Missile Crisis, in that back and forth. Here's just a piece of that.
I have no doubt that the response to my remarks here today will be more dismissals from the Russian government about the United States stoking hysteria or that it has no plans to invade Ukraine.
Attempts to place the blame on Russia are futile and baseless, and this only hides the goal of shifting the blame away from Ukraine. I must say we are very disappointed by the ostrich-like position of our Western colleagues, who are trying not to see obvious things.
Your thoughts on where we are, Hugh?
Well, after I saw Secretary Blinken make the rapid trip, Brett, to the UN today, Secretary Austin in Brussels with NATO, and then President Biden on his way to Ohio, all making the same kind of sharp remarks rebuking Russia. I thought it was an effort not to deter Putin. That's failed, but to deter bad press. And they are going to get bad press because Putin has taken the measure of the president. And like in 2014, the bombardment began last night in Donbass. It's expected to continue. And so I view all of this as grandstanding by Team Biden as a substitute for doing anything to deter Putin from taking another bite out of an ally that we have been unable to prevent in any significant way. That's it. That's the whole deal. We are now running around much sound and fury signifying nothing. Ukrainian security chief, the number one guy, their SecDef, said we must resist Russian provocations. Now, he knows the country's about to get rolled. He doesn't know how much. He doesn't know if they're going into Kyiv or if they're just going to take Donbass, build a land bridge to Crimea, try to get over to Moldova, or just destroy everything. He doesn't have any idea. He just knows they're about to get rolled. Live updates, we're going to lose. Why? Because we haven't done anything for a year to dissuade Putin from marching on Ukraine. By the way, this morning, nice little touch by Putin. Russia announces nuclear exercises as fresh Ukraine talks plan. So they're firing off their missiles. There's some other stories. The New York Attorney General has gotten court authority to depose former President Trump, Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump Jr. Now, the last two will be matter of fact. There's nothing to tell. The accountants withdrew their bank statements. If you think that the Trump kids or the president looked at the bank statements, okay, you can believe that. There's no evidence of that. I'm not sure what the books show. I don't know if they're cooked. I don't know if they borrowed money against fake assets. I don't know any of that stuff. Neither do you. All I know is I could prep Don Jr. I could prep Ivanka to do a deposition. I'm not even good at that, but I could do it. I could be the greatest lawyer in the world. I could be federal judge Dick Leon, really one of the better litigators I ever saw work. I could be Dick Houser, but you'd have to get him off the golf course. And he doesn't do that anymore. Basically, at a restaurant, at home, or on a golf course. I get the best lawyer in the world. I get Stephen Larson in L.A., that's the guy I'm calling whenever I get in trouble, and say, you've got to do depo prep with former President Trump. Now, every lawyer who is driving anywhere right now or getting ready to go to work just put down their razor or pulled over to the side of the road and started to weep a little bit in sympathy with whoever is the lawyer that is going to prepare President Trump for depo prep, because he is not going to be a great deponent. No. That's not going to go well. In any event, that's going to happen. And then let me talk to you about this story. And I've been telling you about it, so I feel bad, but I feel not bad. Sorry, not sorry. Mortgage rates close in on 4%. That's in the Wall Street Journal today, and this is an ad for AndrewandTodd.com. And it's not normal time, but I saw that on the front page of the Wall Street Journal when I got up earlier this morning. Mortgage rates close in on 4%. I told you, it's going to get worse. So if you're going to buy a house, do it now with AndrewandTodd.com. Call them at 888-888-1172. They've been sponsored the show for a decade. I've known Andrew for 20-plus years and Todd for half that time. I know him, trust him, love the guys, actually, and my audience loves them. But they can't help you unless you call them, 888-888-1172. Now, you've missed probably $25, $30 a month by waiting 2 weeks. But go call your kid up and say, you got to go buy a house. I'm going to become a non-occupying co-borrower. Call up your grandson or grandchild. Go tell them to do this because it's not coming back. I can't tell you, you can't print $4 trillion and expect interest rates to stay here. Okay, so 4% isn't 3% and 3% isn't 2%. So you missed the only guy I know who hit the mark. I know one guy who hit the mark, the very bottom. One guy. So there's one person you're not going to match, but don't get left behind. Call AndrewandTodd.com. I also got asked about the Durham filing last night on Special Report with Brett Baer. I am very skeptical of what Durham has got going, and I said it again last night, cut 25.
I want to get you two, Harold and Hugh, to weigh in on that filing and kind of big picture. Hugh, first to you.
Well, I agree that the media has made too much of this filing. I think I said two nights ago, we don't know anything yet because Sussman can either go John Dean or he can go Gordon Liddy. But I noted that John Durham said there will be motions in limine coming. And Harold and I did go to Michigan Law School, and we both know one thing from our time there, from great law professors. Nobody knows nothing about what the prosecution has until the prosecution rolls out its indictment.
That's right.
I do say, Harold, over to you.
That's it. All right, over to you, Harold, because nobody knows nothing. You don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. I do know that Democrats are in big trouble after the San Francisco school board election, cut 26.
We talked last night about the San Francisco school board and that recall effort of three of those members. The National Review writes this: Americans rejecting far-left progressivism. Americans in overwhelmingly Democratic cities are concluding that far-left progressivism has not worked and is not working. The radical approach to policing was resoundingly rejected by voters of Minneapolis in November. Now the radical approach to education has been resoundingly rejected by the voters of San Francisco. If progressives can't win there, they certainly can't win nationwide. Hugh?
Well, appeasement at home, appeasement abroad and inflation at home. We've got an open southern border. We've got closed police precincts. And now we have this earthquake, this tsunami warning out of San Francisco, Brett. Democrats are going to run fast. They're going to sprint away from everything they've done for the last 2 years, especially with regards to kids. Joined now by Tarzana Joe, the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. I'm about to touch on a touchy subject, so bear with me. I've never been a prophet, and I'm not a prophet's son. Judging from the scriptures, friends, that job is not much fun. You find your food for fishes, your ox is often gored. No matter how profound you are, you're pretty much ignored. There's plenty of theology that I don't want to say in, but in the present circumstance, I think I have to weigh in. Huh. Your blessing was invalid. So says the Holy See, if the priest instead of I misspoke by saying we. I understand the Curia is focused on propriety, but invalidating sacraments strikes me as impiety. In all the classes that I took, the Jesuits would mention, though grace is in the act, of course, there's grace in the intention. The media miscovered this, now that's a tired song, by targeting a single priest who says he did it wrong. For which of us, I put to you, would bet a single copper the words at our baptism were meet and right and proper? If that was invalid, by all that's true and hallowed, equally invalid are the sacraments that followed. So next time that it rains, my friend, let's stand out in the weather, stream a papal blessing, and get baptized all together. Then on to other sacraments, especially confessing. So from this present crisis, perhaps could come a blessing. That's Baptism by Rain by Tarzana Joe.
Joe, I love that. And I am waiting for Francis to come out and say, everybody relax, they're in.
That's,
isn't
please,
that the, that please. Is the craziest story, like as though Jesus would care. As though Jesus would care.
You know, every spring, the mainstream media does stories like, no history for the, proof for the historical Jesus, and the Jews were never in Egypt, just to make people who have a traditional religion feel silly. And this year, we gave them a gift.
Yeah, the assist comes from the coverage of, I read that story, I said, this is the dumbest Catholic story I've read in 10 years. The priest was using the wrong word, and they questioned the baptismal. I guess the efficacy of the baptism was questioned. It's just the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
Okay, well, I've given the poetic and liturgical basis for it.
You've given Tarzana Joe's blessing, in fact. And will that be available at tarzanajoe.com?
Of course.
And for your poetry needs.
Catholic and non-denominational friends.
Yeah, and for your poetry needs, tarzanajoe@reagan.com. Business is brisk. He's fully
Absolutely.
Recovered. I do not hear you coughing.
No, it's an intermittent cough now and a toothache. But, it's
can't help the toothache. Can't help you be a goalie either. There's some things I can't fix, Joe.
I know.
Be well. Tarzana Joe.
Thank you.
At tarzanajoe@reagan.com. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Welcome back, America. On this Friday morning, as shelling continues in Ukraine, I'm joined by the former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO, Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy. Good morning, Admiral.
Good morning, Hugh. We're, I think, in for a turbulent few days.
Well, give us your. Let me step back. Just tell us what you see and what you think is happening.
Well, I'm roughly where I've been for quite a while, which is that I think, unfortunately, there's a 70% chance that Putin will go for it. Whether he goes full blitzkrieg, go to Kyiv, take out the Zelensky government, or whether he instead chooses, shall we say, a more prudent course to stop in the southeast and simply carve another chunk out. I don't know. I don't think anybody does. But call it 70%. There's a kinetic event over the next 2 to 3 weeks, but it could be the next 2 to 3 days. I think there's still, here's the good news, such as it is, I think there's still a 30% chance that we can find a path here where Putin climbs down. We have further diplomatic dialogue, but I think those chances are, in fact, dwindling, Hugh.
Admiral, I read very cynically yesterday's Secretary of Defense Austin speech at NATO, followed by Secretary of State Blinken's appearance at the UN, followed by the president's remarks to reporters en route to Ohio as being a concession by the three of them that they're not going to stop Putin, and they're out to deter not Putin. That's failed. They're deterring bad press for not trying. They are trying. It's just that there's really no way to deter Putin that isn't kinetic, to use your term, because his calculation is he'll get the gas back eventually.
I think that's roughly correct, the latter part of it, in terms of there's really nothing else we can throw on the barbecue grill at this point that's going to deter Vladimir Putin. At this point, the calculus is entirely his to make. You could make an argument, and some have, that, well, we ought to slap sanctions on him now. I think there's some merit to that argument that's growing louder by the day, but here you run into the problem the administration has of keeping the alliance on side. And I think that in order to do that, they're going to have to wait until there is kinetic activity, until there is actual tank movement across the border. Because, you know, we've had this conversation before. NATO is like a bicycle with 30 different people pedaling the gears. Some of them are pedaling really hard up toward the front of the bike. Some of them are pedaling, you know, kind of in the middle. Some are pedaling pretty slowly at the back of the bike. So the administration doesn't have the latitude to do precisely what it wants. So it takes the next best, which is arm the Ukrainians, threaten the sanctions, keep the alliance together. I think that's the best you can do at this point.
Now, Admiral, you're the only guy I know who has more jobs than I do. And one of them is at the Carlyle Group. And I assume your phone is ringing and people are saying, what is going to happen to my energy supply in Europe? Because not only do we worry about our Ukrainian allies and the death toll, which was 14,000 people in 2014, we worry about millions of refugees, and we worry about the lights going out all over Europe. And I mean literally going out because there's no energy. What do you tell those people that call you up at the Carlyle Group and ask you what's going to happen?
The first thing we tell them is energy is a commodity. Prices are going to go up because of turbulence in the market. So expect very high spikes in energy prices over the next few days, few weeks, depending on how things play out. We do also say, let's step back and look at the big picture on European energy. And I think this is slightly underappreciated. Natural gas, Hugh, is only about 20% of European energy, 20%. Putin controls about 50% of that natural gas. So his play space is about 10% of overall energy. Now, is that difficult? And does that create lots of opportunities for high prices and scarcity situations? Yes. Does it mean the lights are going to go out in Europe? I don't think so. And already you're seeing natural gas surging. This is good news for the United States, from us to the Europeans. The problem is because they didn't listen to us over the last decade, they haven't built the infrastructure necessary to take that natural gas in its liquefied form from the sea. So point being, what we say, our house view is turbulence ahead, long term. Let's create the infrastructure so that Europe is not dependent. And, oh, by the way, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline turns out to be not a very good deal because it gives Putin control over that 10%.
I'm going to come back to the pipeline in a second, Admiral. I want to talk to you about an unusual declaration last week. The United States named Qatar as one of our 10 essential non-NATO allies. And so there are 10 countries in the world not in NATO that we consider essential, and we added Qatar to the list. What did you make of that? I think it's got a lot to do with the fact that their natural gas and maybe Israel's are the two largest fields in the world.
You are 100% correct. Certainly the precipitating event that made that announcement when it did, while the Emir of Qatar was in the United States, was a realization that natural gas is critically important to resolving this scenario. That's the tactical reason. Strategically, I would point to the fact that Qatar has been a very strong, reliable ally of the United States in the Middle East. Our largest airfields that our military uses are there. They have stood with us throughout many crises in the Middle East. They're working to improve relationships with Israel. There's a lot to recommend Qatar outside of this crisis, but yes, that natural gas was a precipitating factor that led to the decision to make them a major non-NATO ally, and I agree with it.
Now, so my question, if Nord Stream 1 and 2 can run under the Baltic Sea or over Ukraine to get to Europe, why can't there be a pipeline from Israel and Qatar to Europe?
There can be, and I think that nexus of fields in the Eastern Mediterranean, recall that not just Israel, but these are fields that Cyprus, an EU member, Greece, an EU member, collectively there's a good tranche of nations that are working with us, and that could absolutely be an alternative. Those are NATO allies in Israel, which is perhaps the closest thing to a NATO ally for the United States. That, I think, is a very promising idea. And then, Hugh, you supplement it with plan B, which is liquefied natural gas. Then you're much more comfortable making sure that your allies don't have to bend the knee to Vladimir Putin.
And plan C is micro-nuclear reactors, which are extremely safe. They're not the old Chernobyl reactors. They're very good. But I digress. I want to go to
Just to make a quick point on micro-nuclear reactors, what those are also called are the reactors in nuclear submarines, which we are very, very good at and are happy to work with other nations. And, of course, we're doing that now with Australia.
And it's the future. I wish the left would listen to me. If you care about the climate, you ought to be going in that direction. But now
100%.
Let's talk. It's just crazy. Dan Poneman, the former Dep Sec at Energy, and I talk about this all the time. He's an Obama guy. And we just can't figure it out why Europe can't put this together. So, Admiral, civilian Hugh Hewitt sees a story. A couple of P-8s, which I understand to be an aircraft that does surveillance, get buzzed by some Russian fighters within 5 feet. It's called unprofessional and dangerous by the Pentagon. All right, tell me what happens if that goes from unprofessional and dangerous to a crisis where a Russian fighter takes out a PA.
You have put your finger on my greatest concern, which is a miscalculation that occurs in the middle of this strategic confrontation that lights off a conflagration. A P-8 is a big, lumbering 757-like aircraft that is used to hunt submarines and to do broad area surveillance. Very capable, very new, very precise in their air handling abilities. This buzzing incident is high stakes, dangerous, and could be that spark that hits a pool of gasoline. And let me point to, by the way, we had that happen with the U.S. and China some years ago. You probably remember the
first half of the first year of George Bush.
Exactly. And we are lucky in the sense that in those years, China didn't have the capacity to really push back. We were able to resolve that diplomatically. Same kind of thing. And final point here, Hugh, on this. These are young people out there. The pilots flying those aircraft, both the Russian fighters and the U.S. P-3s, they're in their 20s. These are not mature strategic decision makers. You don't think the volleyball scene in Top Gun out there. So on both sides, the potential for miscalculation is very high. It could be an incident like we're talking about. It could be buzzing a U.S. Army Burke-class destroyer in the Black Sea and a captain who's maybe 36 years old. I was 36, 37 when I took command for the first time of an Arleigh Burke destroyer. You see three Russian aircraft headed at your destroyer, you're starting to think about self-defense and lighting them up with fire control, and it could be one of our ships shooting down one of their aircraft. This is how wars start. We need to be very careful.
Admiral, if that incident in the Mediterranean had resulted in a downed American aircraft, what would have immediately happened? Not in terms of, there are lots of scenarios, but who decides what when that happens? What signals go off?
Well, for starters, that goes right to the White House and the Kremlin. This becomes a problem that the President of the United States and the President of Russia are going to be the decision makers. There's no lower level activity, but some practical things when that occurs. Both militaries will go on very high alert. All of their forces globally will go on high alert. You'll see massive surveillance directed from both sides, particularly at the strategic forces. You will see allies go to high state of alert. And again, this is what's so dangerous. You have a miscalculation that leads to a loss of control of the ladder of escalation. That is how World War One started, in an assassination in Sarajevo that leads to mobilization on both sides. And again, these are very young people in these tactical situations. Strategically, it could ignite.
Quick question, last question, Admiral. If an F-22 is trailing the P-8 and the P-8 goes down, does the F-22 have the authority to shoot down the Russian fighter that did it?
If he or she flying that Joint Strike Fighter feels there is, if they feel there is a threat for further military activity, and I would argue if the Joint Strike Fighter, the U.S. aircraft, saw the Russian aircraft, for example, launch a missile and take out the P-8, yes, that is grounds to engage. If it is a incident and a collision, I think you got to step back and assess the situation more clearly.
High stakes. The best guest anyone can have this weekend is Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy, former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO. Thank you, Admiral, for joining me on a Friday for what could be a very long and conflict-ridden weekend. I'll be right back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.